Hello and welcome to another edition of the Sporting Kansas City Show on your home for SKC Soccer, Sports Radio 810 WHB, and wherever you get your podcasts and wherever you stream your video content during this pandemic. We're all beautifully on your video screen right now. And yes, Carter, you look beautiful with that. With what do we call that jersey, by the way? That's the first ever Sporting KC jersey, correct?
Yes.
I think it is. If I remember correctly, I think that's the first one.
I think so. I know it's 2012. I can't remember if 2011 and 12 were the same or if there's a slight difference, but I think you're right. I think it is the first. We've got fun names for all of them. I'm going to have to text Chad Reynolds and see, you know, do they have a name for this one? Because yours is the state line and, you know, we've had some really unique ones over the years.
And a lot of people don't know that the one you have on, I don't know if a lot of people know this or don't know it, but might not notice unless you look up very close. You actually have a little state line on yours, don't you? In the running down the side, like a tiny little, you have to be up real close to see it. So there you go. Yeah, there you go. Yeah. And then meanwhile, Ali Tros is wearing some ridiculous abomination of a jersey right now. What?
It's Cinco de Mayo.
It is Cinco de Mayo.
That's why I'm wearing it. I was either going to hang it up and have it be one of my background things, but then I thought, why not just wear it? And I regret that decision because I've gotten enough from you and Carter, and coming up, Jacob Peterson, I have a feeling, will give me some crap for it as well. So I'm just going to roll with it. You know what? I'm just going to wear this all day. It's going to be my Cinco de Mayo shirt.
Well, I think Alan Polito will probably be a big fan of it. But yeah, I would expect Jacob, as a former, you know, U.S. youth international, to not take too kindly to the L-Tree jersey. Good Cinco de Mayo shout, though. I respect it.
Yep, I'm a fan. I celebrate Cinco de Mayo.
I love everything about Mexico except L-Tree, you know. And yeah, you gotta respect them because they play beautiful stuff. But there's just that's just what rivalries are all about.
That's right. That's right. So we've got a big show for you today. If your question is, who's coming up on the show? The answer is the answer. Jacob Peterson will be joining us on the show, and we're going to cover a lot of ground with him, which will be very fun. So you look forward to that. We're going to talk about the three different classic games that you'll have the opportunity to consume as a Sporting KC fan coming up this week. Thursday night, SKC Classic game, the famous epic Paulo Nagamura game, the comeback against the Vancouver Whitecaps. Then on Saturday, player commentary, me, Daniel Shalloway, and Roger Espinoza will recap the 2017 U.S. Open Cup final against New York Red Bulls. That'll be on Fox Sports Kansas City on Saturday night. And then on Sunday night, on Sports Radio 810 WHB, the radio call that Carter and I were on, we did the play-by-play together of the 2015 U.S. Open Cup final in Philadelphia. So you got a lot of great memories to rehash as a Sporting fan coming up this week. We'll talk about those with Jacob Peterson in a little bit. Some other stuff I want to get to, guys, that is going on around Sporting Kansas City right now. Number one, an activity that I'm really excited to be a part of tomorrow. I say tomorrow, we're taping this on a Tuesday. You're hearing it either live on Sporting KC on Sports Radio 810 WHB on a Tuesday night or during the week. So when I say tomorrow, I mean Wednesday. We are having a special part of our Domino's Feed the Need program. Now, Sporting Kansas City has been basically efforting to serve 1,000 meals per day in Kansas City during this pandemic. Basically, 250 families of four per day is what we've been doing. And our great partner, Domino's Pizza, has decided to step up on Wednesday, tomorrow, with 250 free pizzas. So you think about that, 250 pizzas usually can feed about a family of four. So that's going to be our 1,000 meals on Wednesday, May 6th, in partnership with Sporting Serves, from 12 to noon down at no other pub. I'm going to go down there. I'm going to be handing out pizzas and all that. I'm going to have my Charlie Hustle mask on to make sure that I practice my safety and all those things. But you have to go online to register. If you are a person in need, if you know someone in need of getting some food on the table during these really difficult times, you have to go online to register. Go to sportingkc.com. You'll see it as one of the top – stories on the page there, and you can click on it there. There's a link to register right there. Registration opens at 8 o'clock Wednesday morning. So register. If you know somebody that needs a meal, have them register 8 a.m. I'm sure it's going to fill up right away. So make sure you do that. But Domino's Pizza is going to be available for curbside pickup from 12 to 2 outside of No Other Pub, right on 14th and Grand. Again, you have to register online ahead of time. That way we know who we have the pizzas for and who gets them, because there's going to be a lot of demand for it, guys. But the Sporting Serves thing, I'll start with you, Carter, has been a really inspiring undertaking so far, and tomorrow's going to be another special day in that regard.
Yeah. There's been a lot of people that have been affected by, obviously, coronavirus and everything, and a lot of people are unable to work, and I think that's been a huge aspect of this, and it's been cool to see Sporting reach out and do some of this, and really good to see Domino's hopping on board and wanting to be a part of it as well.
Yeah, I agree, and just the quick action, too, to come up with this whole campaign and rally volunteers and get partners the way that Sporting's been able to do. It's just outstanding. So really looking forward to seeing the impact of that tomorrow.
So again, go to sportingkc.com. You can see the links there to register online if you want to be one of the families to receive one of these pizzas. 8 a.m. tomorrow, probably want to log on as early as you can and get registered for that free pizza. We're going to feed 1,000 people, hopefully, tomorrow on Wednesday at No Other Pub. Now, guys, also, one of the things that we're missing out on right now during this pandemic is First Fridays. Oh, man, First Fridays are just one of my favorite things about Kansas City. The whole Crossroads area is alive and buzzing, and Sporting Kansas City's offices being right down there, we're involved in those things a lot. We don't get to do that right now, and we've got our first one coming up on Friday. So I love this idea. Sporting Kansas City has decided to take First Friday digital. And basically, you get to be the artists. They're having an art contest. And my family and I are going to, you know, enter in this thing. There we go.
Some of the entrants so far.
Yep.
Beautiful. Okay, so tough competition, it looks like, just at first glance.
So here's how this works. First thing you need to do is download the Sporting Kansas City app, okay, from the App Store or Google Play. Once you download the app, do a piece of artwork and submit it by taking a picture of it and uploading it to the app. Now, there's a grown-ups division and there's a kids division. The kids have a better chance of winning because they're going to take 30 entries, and those winners will be on display at Children's Mercy Park later on once we get the season rolling again. So I'm thinking my kids might have a chance. I've got no shot, but I'm going to do one anyway because they're only picking one winner in the grown-ups division. But hey, this is about the fun of it. This is about the community experience. If you got family like me and you're looking for activities to do, this is a really fun one as well. And it can be anything. It can be a painting. It can be some ceramics. It could be whatever artwork you want to do. And I think that's going to be awesome. What do you guys, where's your skill set? If you're going to be doing some artwork, where are you going, Carter? What do you got?
Quite poor. If it's anything with hands, I can't draw a human hand. They're very complex to me. The thumbs, I always draw these weird thumbs, freakish, I would use. So I'll have to try and maybe stay away from any hands in my drawing. But yeah, I'm pretty poor, so I probably wouldn't even crack the top 30 in the kids division, but I'm going to give it a go.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm with Carter. I'm pretty artistic. Like, I like doing crafts and things, but I'm not very good at, like, creating something on my own. I can make something if I have enough supplies. I don't feel like I have enough to really create something good, and I'm with you. I don't even know if I would, like, compete in the kids division, but I do have a pack of markers, and I have a lot of ambition, so we're going to try our best over here. We'll see what I come up with.
Heck yeah.
A pack of markers and ambition.
Ambition.
Yeah.
What a slogan.
That's what Sporting is going to use as, like, the campaign hashtag.
All right, so here's – I'm just going to show you guys. At one point in my life in, freshman art class, I was a bit of an amateur artist. I did some pencil sketchings back in those days. Do those come across?
Yeah, we're seeing them.
Oh yeah,
that was
Nate. You're acting like he's not going to win, but I have a feeling this system might be rigged, and we're going to see a Nate original broadcast it all over the video boards.
You have to understand, those were done close to 30 years ago. And I don't think I've done a pencil sketch since. So I don't think anybody's in any trouble there whatsoever. Although I draw pictures of Matt Beasler in my sleep, in like when I dream at night. So it's possible that maybe I can just draw a picture of Matt Beasler from memory that way. So again, though,
I raised the stakes there and wonder, can you do like, what's the, like a sculpture? That's what we want to see.
Got time. Take a picture of the sculpture. Send that in.
My wife will come home and be like, are you doing another Matt Beasler sculpture? This is ridiculous. This is like the 15th one this week.
Nate's backyard is just like a museum of like, okay, forget the Nelson Atkins, because the Bucati backyard has all sorts of
it's the Matt Beasler.
It's all Matt Beasler, yeah.
It's all Matt Beasler sculptures, just one after, they're all just lined up. Looks like the scene from Westworld when they've got all the, you know, all the different characters just standing there motionless. Again, whatever art you'd like to try, just download the Sporting KC app and get your submissions in by Friday. That's obviously its first Friday, so you got to have your submissions in by Friday. And let's just have some fun with it, you know. I think it'd be really cool to get to check out what everybody – and then you get to go on the app and vote, right, Carter?
Yeah, you can go on the app and vote. And actually, there's already some really cool – I showed a couple on screen here on our video, but there's some cool ones. There's people going different directions, like stylized photos. There's some really cool stuff in here already. So people, I would get the app if you don't have it. And this is, I know we had a Sporting KC app a few years ago. This new app is brand new. It's all different design. You can actually change the app logo on your phone, which is pretty good. Wow. Look at that, huh?
Latest submission that just came.
It's
through.
A doodle. Doodle's a big thing.
Yep. I like that actually. You can sell that. This is a simplistic doodle and really minimalist. I like it.
I didn't attempt a thumbs yet though, Carter.
But yeah, download the app. It's a newer thing, and they're gonna be adding a lot of features to it as we go on. Maybe our podcast will show up on there eventually, which would be really cool. And it's got some cool features already, and I really like this way to do a virtual first Friday and browse through some art. And like I said, there's some really cool stuff in there already.
It's going to be awesome. So check that out. We'll take a break real quick. When we come back, we'll have the answer. Jacob Peterson join us as the Sporting Kansas City show continues right after this. And we're back on the Sporting Kansas City show. Nate Bucati along with Ali Trost, Carter Augustine, and now reunited for the first time in what feels like a long time with the answer, Jacob Peterson. And of course, we appreciate you listening to the podcast, wherever you get your podcast, or watching the video stream now on YouTube, wherever you can pick up the video stream as well, or listening on Sports Radio 810 WHB. And Jacob, who, man, I felt like we were hitting a stride. You and I spent all this time in the off season together preparing to do these broadcasts. We went down to Arizona. We like hiked, you know, mountains together and did all this bonding. And then we had two games. Things were starting to really get rolling. The team was looking good. And then boom, the rug just got yanked out from under all of us. And this is the first time I've actually seen your face. We've texted back and forth a bit and all that, but now I get to finally see your beautiful face. How are you, man? How are you holding up?
I'm doing well. I've missed you guys, though. I'm not going to lie. It's pretty lonely over here. Chasing around a three-year-old. Fortunately, my wife still has her job, and she's dealing with kind of the craziness on that front. So I get the fun joy of chasing around a three-year-old girl right now.
And I am going to tell you that there are a lot of house husbands like me and you these days. My wife is out of the house working in healthcare every day. My kids are at least 10 and 7, and then we got the baby. And he's not mobile yet, you know, like, so you can just kind of stuff him in a carrier or something, and he's not going anywhere. Three-year-old, for you two that haven't experienced this yet, I'm going to put watching a three-year-old all day up against pretty much any job that anybody has to go do for just constant, like how much energy it takes and all that. So you, Jacob, you're in the thick of it right there, man, because she doesn't stop, I'm guessing, right? Like she just goes all day.
Yeah, she doesn't. Which don't get me wrong. I love playing with her. Right. And, I mean, we were just outside. My wife and I, somehow we managed to build this, like outdoor play place. And craziest thing about it is my wife and I didn't get into a single fight, which I feel like that's recipe for disaster when spouses put those together. But we got that done. We haven't moved it outside yet. So we were just playing in the garage and, I tell you what, we were playing some Polly Pockets. My wife kept, she's got like a whole collection from when she was a kid. And then they're kind of mixed with the new ones. So I'm working on my different voices. I picked that up from you, Nate, with your story time. I tried my different voices for different characters. But it's been fun, honestly. And I went through this a little bit when, last year when I was done, when I retired, then I kind of had like a gap year before we moved back to Kansas City. So I was at home taking care of my daughter for the majority of that part. But, you know, I think one thing that certainly taught you and a lot of other, I think, fathers out there, that being a stay-at-home parent is not something that people should think, oh, this is just an easy thing to do. This is a very difficult thing to do. It's fun, but it's also exhausting.
Yes.
And I feel like our society just kind of says, oh, stay-at-home mom, oh, or stay-at-home dad, oh, you know, that's not really seen as, you know, as high as having a full-time job or a working mom or a working dad. And I tell you what, this is everybody, and I hope a lot of people now realize just how important and how difficult of a job and a thing that you're doing for your family. So it's been fun, but exhausting at the same time.
No doubt. No doubt. So for you guys, poor Jacob had to when we were roommates down in Arizona for training camp, one of my routines with the kids is that at home, I read Harry Potter to them, Harry Potter books. And I do stupid voices for all the different characters. And we were doing it over FaceTime. We were out of town. Jacob had to listen to all that garbage while we were rooming together. I'm like, what is this guy thinking he got himself into? You know, but now I got you doing it too. So how are the voices coming along?
I want to hear your Hagrid.
No voices here. I got to work on him. Nate maybe could. He's had experience. I'm still working on him.
All right, Harry. You're doing all right? That's my Hagrid right there.
That's a knockoff Johnny Russell.
It is. It's a more guttural Johnny Russell, is really all it is.
My pick is Dobby. Can you do Dobby the Elf?
Yes, Harry Potter, sir.
That was pretty good.
Yeah. It helps having the movie reference, you know, like you don't have to imagine the voices as much. I think it would be a lot harder if you had to create the voices on your own. With the Polly Pockets, I'm assuming, Jacob, you have to just kind of create your own voices.
Yeah, I do. You know, she likes My Little Pony. So, you know, we have all of our little Polly Pockets are now named Pinkie Pie or Rarity. For those who don't know, those are some of the characters in, we got Rainbow Dash, so Shutterfly or something like that. So those are all of our Polly names too. They just kind of, yes, there are ponies, but then they kind of span over any doll that we're playing with. So it's hard, but it's fun. I got to get my creative juices flowing, you know.
You're doing it. Speaking of, I'm digging the minimalist background for Jacob here. The rest of us have been trying to come up with these different weird decorations and things, you know, as, you know, Allie's got the scarves and everything she's been hanging on the wall. I like Jacob's just going straight, no decorations. We're just doing the show. that way everyone focuses on you, you know.
Right, on the Melia jersey.
Yeah, what's the story behind this Tim Melia jersey that you're rocking here?
Well, after I scored on him in 17, we exchanged jerseys. So I got this from Tim. Now you're a replica of, you know, actually scoring on him.
You're pretty close with Tim, right?
Yeah, Tim and I are good friends. So it was good to exchange jersey with a close friend, which I told you guys, but that's something that I wish I did a little bit more during my playing career, is getting more jerseys. I have a good collection. Mostly my friends, but I wish I would have done it a little bit more than what I did in the past.
We talked with Davey Arno last week about jersey trading and all of that. Even though you weren't happy with how many you got, was there any one that you got that maybe is more special to you compared to the others in your collection? Not to try and diminish any of the others that you traded for.
Yeah, I mean, for me, they all mean something more than just, oh, here's the best player on the team. I got, you know, so-and-so's jersey. For me, they were all guys who I knew personally or played with or, you know, just knew from growing up or whatever. So for me, those mean more to me. Once I finish the basement here and get the man cave going, you know, those jerseys that I'll put up actually mean, you know, more to me. I think probably the best ones that I have, though, are they're my own jersey, but with everybody signing them from the team from the year. So, like, the 2013 one was great because that's obviously when we won the MLS Cup. So, like, those probably mean more. But all of them mean something to me, and it's not just, oh, I got, I don't know, whoever, Ronaldo's jersey or whoever you know. Well, don't get me wrong, that'd be great. But for me, it's more about that sentimental value as opposed to, you know, just the highest name player on the team. But I was going to say, Nate, we had a epic fort going on here. So that's why the bed, I just got a sheet here. We had a bed in here and we got, you can't see off camera, but there are scattered books and stuffed animals over here. So that's why I went minimalist because you should have seen it before. It was like a disaster zone in here.
Oh, the fort, man. We had a perpetual fort. Like what would be our living room is just a toy room. It's just a mess of my 7-year-old daughter's tiny little plastic toys everywhere. But there's a constant fort evolving in there, you know, which is pretty awesome, really.
Hey, too, speaking of Polly Pocket names, Ophi was the name today that Kes. So still remember, he misses her, I think.
Someday, we'll, you know, Kes came over to play, and I think she probably thought she walked into just the greatest mother load of cheap, you know, toys, little girls' toys that you could ever possibly want. On the jersey front, though, so now this is going to put you in a tough spot. Hopefully this is a hard question because these are all special, personal relationships. Who's the best player? Of all the jerseys, not saying which one means the most, but who's the best player that you got a jersey from?
Jeez. I got to think about all the jerseys. I would say this one's up there, Tim's.
Yeah.
Pablo Mascherini's up there.
Not bad.
But I think a very underrated player. He had 60 caps or whatever with the U.S. team, but he's not someone who's consistently talked about as being a, you know, one of the all-time greats and playing with him and playing against him. I know that he certainly was. Man, I don't know who's Drew Moore is a kind of a stalwart in MLS. Guy I played with at college at IU. I don't know. That's tough. There's a lot of good ones, but probably just now recency biased. I'm saying Tim and Pablo are the only ones that I can come up with on the spot here.
Some good ones. I'm going to make you do a hard choice around jerseys as well. See, Nate and I are rocking a couple of the SKC jerseys, and I'm wondering if you have a favorite SKC jersey over the years.
Yeah, I think I'm not sure what year it was, the all white ones.
The Argyle?
Yeah, those were nice.
Yeah, I really like those ones. I like the black ones. Those are also Argyle, aren't they, the black?
Yep.
The problem is that being as pale as I am, those black ones don't flatter me very well. If my skin was darker, I think I would like it a little bit more, but I just look like a ghost in those. So the white ones actually make me, I think, feel like a little bit tanner or something. So I really like those. I know Flaherty didn't like those because those got, you know, green dye after every game. But I thought those ones were sharp. Those were nice. I also like the ones that Nate has on. I like that one. I do not like the jersey Allie has on, though. Certainly not.
Not even on Cinco de Mayo.
No, there's no other deep meaning with this. I found it in my house. I found it in my parents' house. And I was like, they're going to bring it with me.
So a couple things to talk about with you, Jay. She's already getting, she got beat up by Carter in the first segment about the, about that jersey. And, you know, look, I actually kind of appreciate the Cinco de Mayo flair, but that also brings back some really painful memories for me because I was in Columbus, Ohio, when the U.S. lost to Mexico this last qualifying run up. And that's the only time I've seen USA Mexico in person. So that's a painful, painful memory for me. Positive memories, though. We're going to talk about those because coming up on our both of our broadcast partners, Sports Radio 810 WHB and on Fox Sports Kansas City and on SportingKC.com, we're going to be running back more classic games this week, Jacob. And I wanted to talk to you about a couple of them because these are games that you were a part of. So Thursday night is the classic match rebroadcast where they let the fans vote on Twitter about it. And this week they voted on the comeback win in 2015 against Vancouver, which if I recall, you played a decent role in that game. And then the game on Sunday on Sports Radio 810 WHB that's going to re-air is the 2015 U.S. Open Cup final in Philadelphia. And then on Saturday, the classic match on Fox Sports Kansas City is going to be the 2017 U.S. Open Cup final. So those are all the games we're going to re-air. So let's go back to that Vancouver game first, because that's the one that's going to air on Thursday night. That's the one where Paulo Nagamura scored, I believe, the equalizer and the match winner in that one. You guys were down 2-0 and then 3-1, if I remember correctly. What are your thoughts? What are your memories of that game?
Yeah, that game, I still think that with the exception of the couple finals that we've hosted, I think that game was the loudest that I've heard Sporting Park, whatever iteration it was called at that point. But it was just such a, while we should have won the game, you know, I feel like back then, wasn't like the 2018 version of Sporting that scored a bunch of goals every game. You know, we were more sound defensively. So then to come back and score too late and Naga scoring two, you know, I remember one of them, I can't remember if it was the third or the fourth, but I was lining up a shot and I was thinking, oh yeah, I'm going to smash this one. You know, I'm going to hook around it and kind of bend it like Paulo did, but Paulo was running through much better angle and he took it. And Nate, I think we talked about this on air with the Pulido goal against Houston, where Johnny Russell was getting ready to shoot it, and Pulido kept – so it was a kind of a similar thing where I was like, no, Paulo, and then Paulo scored, and I was like, yeah, he probably should have taken that. And to be honest, he probably had a better chance of scoring than I did, especially at that time. So it was good. But, man, the unlikeliest of hero, you would say, in Paulo coming through there. But that was just – I feel like that's one of those games that kind of puts Naga in that like cult status. There's of course the penalties and the Band-Aid and all that, but man, that game it was a unbelievable atmosphere.
Yeah, I agree with you. One of the loudest that I've heard the stadium, just incredible. And I think people call it the Nagamura game for good reason. And it was inserted into the vote this week on Twitter and immediately just blew away all the other choices because people loved that game. I wanted to ask you about Naga real quick because, like you said, unlike your hero, did you guys give him stick for the Band-Aid thing in the MLS Cup? Was that U.S. Open Cup? MLS Cup. Did you guys give him any stick for the Band-Aid?
Yeah, I don't think anybody really gives Paulo too much. I mean, he's the silent assassin, right? He's one of those guys that you always kind of count on. So I wouldn't want to rub Paulo the wrong way at all. I saw you guys had a nice feature the other day, Carter.
Yeah, that was good. That was good talking to him. He had some good memories and obviously what a great soccer background he has before even coming to MLS. And did you ever see him becoming a coach now that he's managing SKC too?
I mean, he's, yeah, I'm not surprised. I mean, he's just, he's one of those guys that you could say it over and over again, but he's just the perfect teammate, the perfect guy. Not only is he a freak, I've said it before, but just how the guy could be out injured for 3 months and then, you know, his first week back on the field, he's the fittest guy on the field. It's absurd. But then he's got that engine, but then the cerebral way that he thinks about the game and he plays, he really is a perfect player. I have no doubt that he'll be successful as a coach. I know first couple seasons, they're kind of figuring out, you know, what direction Swope's going to go, or SKC2. But he's going to be successful. He's that type of guy. He's going to work as hard as it's going to take. And he's got that fire, that bite, which I feel like you need as a coach. And that's why I said I won't mess with Paolo, because even though he's small in stature and kind of the silent type, man, he won't want to get into a scrap with him, put it that way.
Okay, so if he wasn't the one that you would mess with, who was the player that you played with during your time at Sporting that was the easiest one to pick on? Was there anyone in the locker room or on the field that was a little bit more susceptible to some of that stuff?
Oh man, this is really putting me on the spot. Let's see who I like to. no, I would like to watch the Benny and Seth exchanges and try to get involved in that one way or the other. kind of poking the bear, because both of those guys could go at it, which I think spilled over into an actual game one time. but I liked I liked giving it to Tim a little bit during our finishing drills. It would be the forwards and then the goalies. John Kempin was another guy that we'd like to rile up there. And of course they would give it back. But when you're on a roll in those finishing drills, you know, you could just see the temperature of the goalies, you know, just keep raising and raising until they're going to explode. So those are fun. But I don't know, you know, in the heat of it, there's not really like an easy guy. I would feel bad if I was just picking on the weakling, you know. You gotta go after the strongest, the alpha male out there.
Yep. Punch up instead of punch down, right? Exactly. That actually, okay, that brings up a really interesting point then, a topic that I wasn't planning on broaching with you, but now that we've gone down this road, the next game that we're going to air, that I talked about, that 2017 Open Cup final, we taped that where we did the second screen, and it's me, Daniel Shalloway, and Roger Espinoza went back and watched that game together and did commentary. And it's really fun to watch. Trust me, you guys are going to want to tune in and see this thing when it airs on Saturday. But at one point, I ended up asking Roger about – his name came up in the media. I don't know if you heard or saw this, Jacob. Did you see what Hercules Gomez, the story he told about Roger Espinoza and Claudio Lopez? Yeah. Okay, now I'm guessing – that would have been before you got to Sporting Kansas City, right?
Yeah.
Had you ever heard that story before?
No, I didn't, actually. No.
So I went ahead and asked Roger about it because, I mean, shoot, Hercules Gomez said it on ESPN, you know, and he said his phone just blew up with people, you know, texting him about it. I don't want to give everything away. I want people to go ahead and watch it because Roger can tell a really good story. But one of the things he says that he and Claudio are really good friends to this day. They've stayed in touch. If anything, their friendship got stronger after Roger finally stood up to him and just said, hey, man, I'm not going to take this anymore. He disputes the slap a little bit. He said that was maybe a little exaggerated. But, look, people that have ever gone to practices know this stuff happens, right? Like, guys are competitive. Altercations happen, and usually there's nothing really that comes of it. If anything, maybe they go out and get a beer together afterwards. Was there ever a moment in your career where, as maybe the young guy that was getting picked on a little bit, you had to stand up and say, I'm not taking this, or show that you weren't going to back down from maybe one of those big time guys? Especially because early in your career, I would guess that was back when there was that big disparity of some guys making this much money and then other guys on the team making this much money.
Yeah. think in my first few years in Colorado, it was the Pablo, Kyle Beckerman, Jovan Karofsky, Aitor Karanka, who played Real Madrid, coached at Real Madrid then after too, Mike Pecky, Terry Cook. I don't know how familiar everybody is with these names, but I felt like it was a good veteran group. There wasn't any there wasn't anybody who would step out of line and you know, treat the young guys too hard. I think that you have to treat the young guys in a way and show them the ropes. I think what I saw that thing that Herc was saying, and you know, obviously I think Claudio Lopez was going a little too far, like berating his teammates, a la Zlatan and all that. And those guys, they would get on you, but there was never a need, you know, to take that stance. I think as you get older, and then when you become a veteran, then it's on you to be maybe that voice, and that voice that holds guys accountable. And if an altercation needs to happen, then that's when it happens. Not when I never had to use it, you know, in the way that Roger did. If anything, I had to use it the other way, where, you know, if guys weren't getting involved or didn't have the bite or whatever, then, you know, there was actions to be taken that way. So fortunately I never had to use it, and I don't think I would have at that point stood up to Mike Pecky. I think he would have probably put me in my place at that point. He's a personality. Great. I love him. He's a friend of mine, but and a really good veteran leader. But as a rookie, I wasn't going to talk back much to Mike or Pablo, that's for sure.
I think that's really interesting, though, just because of how much, like, that kind of, I guess, system works throughout an entire person's career. I mean, from the time that you're a freshman in high school playing, you've got the seniors who are kind of either hazing or implementing that type of leadership, and making sure that everyone younger or the up-and-comers are doing their part. Same goes for college, and then when you get into your career. But for you as a leader and as a veteran, what was an example of a time where maybe you felt like you were either mentoring someone and helping get them to that next level? Or was there someone that you kind of took underneath your wing early on or later in your career, early on in their career?
Well, I think it's a tough one because, I mean, you're going through, you guys being sports junkies, you see this like with Aaron Rodgers, where they drafted a quarterback in the first round, right? Are they, you know, what's his role? Is his role to mentor him and teach him? Or is his role going to be, no, this is my position, you have to earn it? Which is kind of ironic considering Aaron did the same thing with Brett Favre there. But so for me, I think it depends. In Kansas City with Sporting, to me it was never – one, I was never a 100% starter the whole time in my career here, so I never really had, you know, that component. But I also thought that it was my job as being a member of the team and somebody who bought into what Peter and the rest of the club kind of preaches, is to teach the younger guys, teach whether it was Connor Hallisey or even Daniel Chaloui when he came up. You know, just teaching guys, Jimmy Madrondo when he was out there, or, you know, a bunch of different players who would come in, whether they were young or not, is to just being there for a while and knowing what Peter expected out of just about every position on the field. If I could help guys or, you know, when you're out there and you're playing and you're in the mix, sometimes you don't see everything, right? And to me, it was my role as a veteran and somebody who cared about the team first to kind of guide them and show them, okay, instead of, you know, doing this, maybe try to do that or whatever. So I can't say there was like one specific example that I can give right now. But I think the culture around Kansas City at large, around Sporting, was something that guys actually wanted to do, that they wanted to help people out, where on other teams, that's not the case. So I think that fortunately in Kansas City, it was kind of all-in approach. Everybody's doing this, and that's kind of our blueprint for success.
Nate, I was going to ask about something else. Were you trying to check back on those two other games that we're going to air this week?
Well, no, I think – well, I guess we should ask a quick question for Jacob on that classic match 2015 Open Cup Final. You know, we've talked about it with you a few times, but, hey, man, that was another one of those trophies in Philadelphia. What is your biggest memory, and what do you recall the most about that that game?
Well, what do you want me to say here, Nate?
I want you to say whatever you want, buddy.
I think starting off, I think it was the other championships that we won, at least up until that point, were at home. So I think that that was kind of a cool thing, kind of a us against, you know, the world type, even though, you know, Philly's fans aren't exactly coming out in high numbers there. But, you know, it was like, all right, we're going in here. We have a job to accomplish. And, you know, it was another, of course, Sporting leaves it to a shootout. So, yes, the thing that I remember the most then is Jordy stealing my moment in the sun. I'm not going to say anything bad about Jordy right now because I like him. He's a good guy. But I will say maybe I'll get into it later when we talk about that game. At a later part, but the stuff that he said, it did not go down that way. And then he gets a commercial out of it, and he gets a bunch of things that wasn't how he portrayed it to the media. But I like Jordy, so I'm gonna leave it at that. But hey, we won, and that was the most important thing.
Yeah, you got the trophy.
Someday, I'm being real careful here.
Yeah, someday I'm going to get a couple of Michelob Ultras in you, and we're going to get
the real Carter show. I'll have a couple, and then I'll probably do something.
The ratings will be
right. High
for that.
We're booking it.
Yeah,
we're booking that.
All right, Carter, you take this in a different direction.
I was just going to say this. We've got hopefully some bright news this week for MLS with the announcement that they're returning to individual voluntary training with teams this week. I'm curious, you know, as a former player yourself, what do you think this experience would be like? And just as a broadcaster now, how excited are you that we're finally maybe getting the first signs of getting back to it?
Yeah, we all know it's a crazy time right now. It's not, there's no blueprint, there's no look how we did this last time. Like, this is obviously a once in a century type of thing. So for me, I think my daughter was trying to come in the room, I think number one is player safety, and, you know, not just player safety, but in general, you know, the safety of everybody. So of course it's good to you know, hopefully be able to start training and start to get a plan together. I'm not sure how far along MLS is and all that, but it's tough. I think as a player, I mean, it's hard for even me and all you guys, to probably everybody out there watching. It's hard to be, you know, stuck at home and not being able to do the things that you love to do. But that's a sacrifice that we all have to make right now, right? But as a player, that to find that motivation to stay in shape, there's it's hard to have access to a gym. You know, there's just a lot of factors that make this challenging. How do you get touches on the ball? You know, can you go to a local park? Or, you know, there's just so many different things. So I think, you know, having these individual type of trainings where they're still, you know, having the distancing and make sure that. Everything's wiped down and all the you know, public health stuff sorted out. But I think that's, you know, they're getting the ball rolling, and that's good. But man, the motivation, I think I've talked to some guys, and you know, they're certainly more motivated than I am. But we were talking before we went on the air, like, it's hard to say, all right, I'm gonna get up and you know, get a good fitness workout in here and maintain that fitness, because Sporting was flying. The guys were playing well, and everything was kind of clicking early on in the season, which is what you want. And now with this kind of unknown future, it's hard to kind of know when, you know, everything preseason, you have a start date, right? So it's a slow build into that. With this, there's no date that, you know, you're going to start. So it's like, how do you maintain that? How do you gauge that? And it's difficult, but you know, I think that the guys that I've spoken to, at least a lot of the veteran guys, have been doing it, but it's challenging for sure. I don't know how I would do it. I think it would be hard. But man, I'm trying to up my mileage for the May miles here and watching like other guys around the league and said Kai Kamara is doing, you know, crazy 10 mile runs at a pace that a guy his age and his size should not do, which is good for me. It's motivating me a little bit to get back on it. But man, it's tough, and it's certainly Kansas City. Fortunately, we're not in the same situation as other teams are, where, you know, in New York, how do you do that? You know, right now you can't really. But man, it's certainly hard for everybody right now.
You talk about how hot Sporting started out of the gates, and to have that momentum interrupted the way it was, both individually and as a team, granted different circumstances, but how do you compare that to anything you've experienced as far as feeling like you were just on an absolute roll and then having that abruptly stopped and then trying to maintain or get back to where you were?
Yeah, obviously there's not a like for like, but the only thing that I can think of is the World Cup breaks that have happened, you know, a few times throughout my career, where you take, you know, 3 weeks off of no games or whatever during the World Cup, excuse me. And that's definitely hard because some guys are gone, right? Some guys are playing in the World Cup. Of course, I want to be at the World Cup. Everybody, you know, that's playing wants to be there. So to try to keep that fitness, but that's also, you know, going into the season, all right, we have 6 months and then June 15th, World Cup break starts, you know?
Yeah.
Where this is just, obviously nobody knew that it was going to happen. Nobody knew that it was going to happen that quickly. Once the news dropped in the NBA, and it's just like, I mean, it would have been hard. I don't know. I think it's very difficult for the players to really maintain that and to maintain their focus, not just their fitness, but their focus on it, because something like this happens and you realize sports are sports, they're fun, and we all love them, and it's you know, players' jobs, but you know, the public health component is the most important thing here, and it kind of puts sports into perspective, I think.
So this challenges your creativity at home too, because like with me, with my two kids, they both play youth soccer. They don't get to go practice now, and you know, their coaches are sending us stuff saying, hey, work, you know, make sure you stay up on your fitness and keep working on your skills and get your touches in. But I'm guessing my kids are normal in this regard for their ages. They're not exactly excited to go out and do a bunch of soccer drills for a half an hour straight. You know, that's not going to motivate them. They like to go play. So I'm trying to find games to play with them. So one of the things I've done, and this is, by the way, driving my wife absolutely insane, our garage door is one, like the pattern on it is these little squares. Like it's got little, you know, it almost looks like a big Connect Four board or whatever. So I took a piece of chalk and I wrote numbers in every square. Like in the middle, that is the smallest numbers, and then the numbers get bigger as you get to the corners. And we have one of those little pass back nets. And so we play games where you have to pass back first time finish, and whatever number you hit on the garage door is how many points you get. And we'll play like first one to 30, you know, and the kids like get really into it now. It's fun because like fights break out and stuff. But my wife came home and saw us just banging soccer balls off the garage door and numbers written all over the door. And I thought she was going to have a nervous breakdown, but I'm like, hey, we got to get creative here. You know, we got to find a way to make this fun for everybody, because it's tough too, because for them, they don't get to even get together and play with their friends, like in the driveway. At least that's the way we're handling it right now. We're practicing the social distancing. So they don't get to have their friends over to play together. So you got to find some like individual way to make it fun, you know?
Okay. Yeah. That sounds really fun. Like I want to go, like that sounds like something Tom and I have been going to the park and we'll find two trees that are like somewhat close enough together and we'll shoot on each other just with the soccer ball. That's what we've been doing. But I like the numbers. That's fun.
Well, that's a better idea. Nate's going to have to get a new garage door after.
Yeah, I mean, I've basically decided that's just going to be how it goes. We're going to sacrifice a garage. I'm just hoping we don't hit any windows, you know, while we're at it.
Have you played Slam? Nate, have you played Slam? Any of you guys played that? It's like a knockout in basketball, but for soccer, you use a wall.
Okay.
It's you get in a line, and you either get one touch or two touch, and you have to put it on frame. And yeah. Then the person behind you goes and you go, it's like knockout. So it's a lot of fun.
So you say one touch or two touch, where does the ball come from? Just off the passing net or?
You're playing off the wall. So it's like knockout. Once you go, the person behind you. So the person, you'll start it.
Oh, I see.
From a dead ball. And yeah. then it's just like knockout. The person behind you has to control it off the rebound, off the wall, and then put it back on frame. I like that.
I use that. You bought one of these pass back nets where you can either pass it on the ground to you or it'll flick it up in the air, which has been fun for the finishing because we do some where it's like you got to finish on the ground. Sometimes you got to finish with the volley, you know, and it's kind of fun.
Hey, at least your kids are playing. I'm trying to get Kess, my daughter, to try to play, and she is just not having it at all.
She is three.
Pony,
right?
Like, taking over.
Yeah.
What was that?
She's only three, right?
Yeah, but you see video of Benny's, Luca, he's like one and he's already kicking it. And I'm like, Kesslyn's got to get on it. She's
all behind.
When this is over, you got to sign her up for Sporting Stripes. She'll get Coach Trost, potentially.
Yeah.
Help her out.
She needs it.
There you go.
Yeah. I'm happy to do a little Zoom. We can do a little tutorial. We'll probably end up playing Polly Pockets. That's fine. I used to play those growing up, but we can start with soccer and see where it goes.
Right, yeah. Work on your voices then.
You know what? You can come up, Jacob, with things that don't even seem like soccer too. You can do like what my daughter loves to play Simon Says with a soccer ball. She doesn't realize she's doing soccer drills that way. She just thinks she's playing Simon Says, but it's like, you know, Simon Says do TikToks, you know, and try to catch them. You got it's all about the creativity, man, how you present things, you know. Hey, before we let you go, Jacob, one thing, I don't know if people have seen that little, can you show us the coffee mug you're drinking from right now? For one thing, the Chiefs have picked up a couple of new Michigan players, so I don't know if you have any thoughts on those guys. But for another thing, I think most of us have been watching the Last Dance documentary, and as a Michigan guy, I'm assuming you're a Pistons fan. And I just wondered what your like reaction was to watching the portrayal of those Detroit bad boys and that beef between Michael Jordan and Isaiah Thomas.
First off, that Last Dance is excellent. It is.
Right?
I mean, I've said I haven't watched the fifth and the sixth episode, I think, that aired on Sunday. But I'm caught up, or I watched the first four. I think they portrayed the Pistons probably exactly how they were so far. I haven't gotten into the whole Isaiah thing. I know that that's coming. Where I love Isaiah because, one, Isaiah went to Indiana, which obviously I went to, and then he was a Piston legend, and I'm a Detroit fan. So I love Isaiah. I know that him and Michael obviously did not get along, and that's fine, but the Pistons then, while now, I mean, I have a Bill Laimbeer jersey in my closet. I should have worn that jersey, actually. but, like, I was just a little too young to remember them. I was born in 86, so they won, what, 89 and 90. So, like, I was Kesslyn's age. Like, I was 3 or 4. Like, that's kind of too young. I remember the teams that I liked were the Jordan Bulls, and probably after his hiatus, you know, that.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think that even guys like my age from Michigan and who are Pistons fans, we take pride in being that bad boys type. I mean, even the teams with Ben Wallace and Sheed and Rip and Tayshaun, those guys were kind of a hard-nosed group too. I mean, they were all about defense, right? Detroit basketball, where we're defensive. We don't have the flashy stars. And that's kind of what Detroit as a city and Michigan kind of prides itself on. Now in the NBA, I don't think you can win like that. But back then you could. So I think that's been awesome. But dude, who doesn't love Jordan, right? Jordan's like the iconic figure, especially, you know, guys my age, that was like, you know, who I grew up watching, you know, those intros of the Bulls, you know, running through the city of Chicago. Like that's awesome. And my wife's from Chicago, so she's a diehard Bulls fan. So it's been cool. I think that Last Dance is perfect. It's kind of saved us from this, you know, sports purgatory here and kind of given everybody some content to watch. But man, I love the Pistons and that kind of stigma that they had. Now, as far as Michigan players here, who they picked up Shea, right? Patterson, and mm-hmm. who else they get?
Defensive
Michael Dana out of Michigan. They got him late in the draft. I believe he was their fifth pick out of six, 177 maybe. But yeah, he's a defensive end, a bit shorter, not typical.
He transferred from Central Michigan or Western Michigan?
Yeah, he only played his senior year at Michigan. He transferred from Central Michigan and then was there his senior year. And yeah, just got drafted. But then they also it was Shea Patterson. So, and then they have also got Frank Clark, as you know, on the team as well. So,
and Taco Charlton, wasn't he a Michigan guy?
Taco Charlton, yeah, that was the other one. So four Michigan guys. Carter's not happy.
I think Michigan had the second most players drafted, and somehow we ended up how we were in the season this year. So I don't know if that's coaching or what it is, but no, actually I think it was quarterback. And so I hope that Shea Patterson is a better NFL quarterback than he was a college quarterback, because he has been somebody who my family and my friends and any Michigan fan that I've talked to has had a love-hate, mostly hate relationship with Shea Patterson. So I hope he's turned the corner and he's better, but man, he's cost Michigan a lot of games.
He'll be fighting Jordan Ta'amu for that backup spot behind Patrick Mahomes. And I think they played together at Ole Miss for a little bit early in his career, if I'm correct.
Now, I did like Chad Henne, who was here.
Yeah. Yep.
Chad Henne, legend at Michigan.
So I hope Patterson never sees anywhere near the field for the Chiefs, because something's gone really wrong with Patrick Mahomes and Chad Henne if that happens. So I think the Chiefs are going to be okay there.
Yeah, he'll have a great career on the practice field, we hope.
I had a couple of my buddies say, unlucky Mahomes, like his time's over now that Shea arrived. If you're a Michigan fan, Mahomes is Mahomes. But as a Michigan fan, you will see just how absurd that claim is. Patterson is not the answer.
Well,
no, you are.
One answer, and it's you.
I did not mean it that way.
Yes, I meant it that way.
That was awesome. It is fun, though. It's funny right now seeing, like, different NFL teams pick up quarterbacks, and it's like, oh, QB competition. Anytime the Chiefs do, it's like, all right, have fun competing for spot number two or three or whatever.
Yeah.
Going for it, so.
Nobody can compete for the spot of the answer on this show, because that is Jacob Peterson. And I didn't even get to ask you about the stuff that I wanted to, so we're just going to have you on the show again, because someday – I want to really do a deep dive into the residency program, because I think you're going to be able to tell us some incredible stuff about that, especially for people that don't really remember what that was all about. But we've already gone 30 minutes with you today, so we're going to let you off the hook for now. Will you come back on with us and talk residency sometime?
Just for you, Nate.
Yes. Kes is welcome to come over and play with my daughter's plastic toys. We'll disinfect all of them, whatever you need. Thanks for the time, Jacob. We really appreciate it, man.
All right. Thanks, guys.
All right, that is the answer. Jacob Peterson, we'll be back to wrap things up on this edition of the Sporting KC Show right after this. To wrap things up on another edition of the Sporting Kansas City Show, Nate Bucati, Ali Trost, Carter Augustine. Our thanks to Jacob Peterson for joining us. Quite good stuff from Jacob. And now we wrap up, guys, with our goals to Google for this week. And Allie, I'm going to start with you. And if it's one from some Mexico win in like World Cup qualifying or something, I'm going to be really upset with you. I'm just saying that right now.
I thought about doing something like that or going with maybe an Alan Pulido goal or something, but instead, I am going back and honoring our conversation with Davey Arnaud and the stinky Beckham jersey, and I've got a David Beckham goal. It was 2012. He's with the LA Galaxy, and just from 35 yards out, hits an absolute rocket. In that season, he scored 7 goals and I believe had 9 assists, and this goal came after a huge run that he had in the month of July after getting the snub for the Olympic team. He was left off of the roster, came back with a vengeance, and showed it on the field. So that was just one of the handful of goals he scored during that stretch. But just, again, absolute rocket. David Beckham, you know, lethal from anywhere on the field. Great goal against Portland Timbers.
All right, Carter, what do you have?
I like that one. I don't remember that. I'm gonna have to Google that goal, I think, in the end.
It was an early one. It tied the game at 1-1, but it was, dead of summer. Just, I mean, again, didn't even, just almost looked like it could blast through the back of the net.
Man.
Chef's kiss.
What a legend for MLS. Looking forward to rewatching that one. I've got one from a different MLS legend, and he's the guy that joined us today, Jacob Peterson. Wish I would have shown it to him, but it's the in 2014 up in Toronto against Toronto FC, 79th minute, 80th minute, and it's 1-1, and who steps up to the plate but the Canadian killer, Jacob Peterson, slotted finish. And this one's a special one for me because it was my first trip to Toronto, and that is a beautiful, beautiful city. So multicultural, and I just had an absolute blast that weekend, and Jacob Peterson made it even better with that wonderful goal.
Okay, so if we're going to do that, then my first trip to Toronto with Sporting Kansas City was the very next year, 2015, and Jacob Peterson scored the cherry on top against Toronto in a 3-1 win. It's not the most spectacular goal. It's a really good goal. It's not a screamer from long distance or anything like that, but what I remember about that was, not only was it my first trip to Toronto, my first season calling the games, Sporting had a 2-1 win. I think they were they might have been down a man by late in the game. And they got the ball forward. There's about maybe 4 minutes to go or so, the 86th minute or so. And I said to Andy Greenebaum, who was my broadcast partner for that game at that time, you know, should Sporting Kansas City just take it to the corner and try to kill the clock off? And he's like, no, too early to do that. And I'm not – like 30 seconds later, Jacob scores the third goal to put it away. And Andy just looked at me and said, that's why you don't dribble it to the corner, you know, and just completely put me in my place. So so the answer, Jacob Peterson, he was the Canadian killer for sure. And he had those killer American flag shoes that he would rock on those trips north of the border as well. So that's my goal to Google. So 14 and 15, Jacob Peterson against Toronto. And then Sweaty Becks with the long-range strike. Those are the ones to
Sweaty Becks.
There you go. Sweaty Becks. I don't know if anybody calls
it that. Like, when I think of David Beckham now, like, that is what I think about. Not that, you know, not been like Beckham, not that, you know, any of the other accomplishments he has. Like, I think of the Davey Arnaud, David Beckham kind of stinky jersey that will soon be hanging up maybe in their dining room or something.
And that he only got it because his wife admonished him into getting it, which is just –
can you imagine what the smell would have been if he had actually ended up exchanging the towel like originally might have happened and not the jersey?
Yeah.
That might have been even smellier.
That's true. Well, that's going to do it for us. Our thanks to Jacob Peterson. Don't forget Sporting KC app. Download it and submit your art entries and then vote on all of them. It's going to be a lot of fun with our first Friday. You can vote for Allie Trost Doodle right there if you want to. It's the Sporting Kansas City First Friday contest coming up on Friday. That's going to do it for us. We'll see you next week on the Sporting Kansas City Show.